My name is Jerry, and this is the Wild Eye Podcast. Learn about monopools. Hello, everybody. Now, in this episode, I'm going to hand over to Andrew and Luke as they break down monopools. It's a place I think a lot of people get wrong. Most people think it's just a floodplain with some trees and the Zambezi River in the distance, but that's literally only about 5% of it. The actual park stretches south with baobabs, rocky cliffs, and dense mopami forests most people never actually see. What makes it wild is how you experience it, though. You're walking through the bush with your guide, tracking elephant behavior or following a lion's footprints, not just sitting in a vehicle, and that's a pretty cool thing. It's remote enough that morning traffic at a spring includes elephants, wild dogs, even lions, all passing through at once. It happens. So whether you're a photographer wanting the best shots of your life, or you just after a genuinely spiritual safari experience, this place delivers differently. Grab a cup of coffee and join Luke and Andrew as they talk about monopools. Enjoy.
Mr. Beck, or should I say Mr. Monopools?
Monopools.
Yeah,
what a place, man.
What an absolute gem of a place. I know you've been there probably more so than any of us.
Sure.
Maybe Mike Laubsch has been there a few more times, I don't know.
Yeah, it's, I actually don't know how many times I've been, to be very honest. What I can say is that I've been often enough to see the changes over the years. Mm. The Nyamatusi area, there's a pan just behind where Nyamatusi camp is, called Njiwi Pan. We slept out there literally under the stars as part of an adventure trail that I did a number of years ago, just before they started building what is now Nyamatusi Lodge.
Yeah.
So it used to be a wilderness area that we walked through. So yeah, I've seen some changes. I've spent a fair amount of time out there, and it's a place that I love, and it's actually a very, very unique experience. There was a time where it was the new kid on the block, and it was the place to live.
Fast enough,
eh? Absolutely. Yeah. And I, you know, the thing is, whilst destinations go through phases, what's on offer there from an experience perspective doesn't really change that much. So it's still as great as it always was. And I think there's some very unique photographic opportunities, and beyond the photo opportunities, experiences to be had out there.
Absolutely. And just because it's not trending anymore doesn't mean it's not an incredible place to go and experience.
Exactly.
I think I've often said to you, if you need to send a guide on the Monopools scheduled safari, send me. I'll go every time to Monopools. I think it is probably my favorite place in Africa.
Really?
To be fair, yeah, I like Lower Zambezi.
Yes.
It's also cool, you know, on the other side, it's a little bit more action-packed, maybe predator-rich and chaos and Ferrari safari. But I love Monopools. I love the idea of walking those floodplains. And it's funny, you bring up Nyamatusi. I mean, I've stayed in Nyamatusi two times now. And I love that part of Monopools.
Nyamatusi two times.
Yeah. Nyamatusi two times, yeah. But I absolutely love that area. And there's also that Nyamatusi pride who doesn't mind you being on foot every once in a while around, provided there's not too many other people on foot. But it's just such a nice area. And Monopools itself, such a gem. I think what a lot of people don't realize, though, is just how big that entire conservation area is. You know, everyone thinks, oh, cool, Monopools, a couple of winter thorn trees and the Zambezi River in the distance.
Just that floodplain, like the top maybe, 5% of the whole area.
Yeah.
And to be fair, so, you know, if you're thinking about it, and you, for those of you who haven't quite been, if you picture the top of a page, and if that very top of the margin of your page there is the Zambezi River, which in itself is an iconic landscape feature, that space before you get the first blue lines running across there is pretty much the floodplain. And then if you go halfway down that page, you get the other side of that escarpment and really the southern boundary of Monopools.
Yeah.
And some camps and experiences out there, but literally nothing in between. So that's why people only know that part. Is everything in between is that Jess bush, which is a type of vegetation that the guys talk about, not conducive to walking, safe, not
fun. Yeah, you certainly don't want to walk around a Mopani forest with those elephants cruising around.
And the Mopani is one thing, but the Jess is a different story. Yeah. I think the technical term is that it's thick as pig shit.
That's a good way to put it. Yeah.
But anyway, let's start at the halfway through the page and then work our way back up to the top, shall we? Like Kavinga, Chitake, that part of Monopools, that southern boundary of that.
Yeah. Well, the first time I went to Monopools, I went with Biz Storms. Shout out to Biz. But went with Biz Storms, and all what we did is we focused on the floodplains, you know, standing elephants, those floodplains, the dramatic open areas. And we sat at Nyamatusi. It was stunning. It was incredible. The second time I went was hosting our Best of Monopools. It used to be called Best of Monopools Photo Safari. And The first three nights were spent at Kavinga, which is our first stop on our most recent, our modern Monopoles photo safari.
And polar opposite.
Yeah. Yeah, polar opposites. And I didn't know what I was in for at all. You know, I knew it was going to be amazing. I knew there was hides. But you sort of fly in over that escarpment, right? And for those of you that haven't flown into monopoles before, yeah, it can get a bit bumpy going over those mountains. It's nothing you haven't experienced before, don't worry. But it's very adventurous and it's super remote. And you kind of just start seeing these big baobab trees, right, all over the landscape surrounded by Jess and Mapani and whatever it might be in these old ancient dry riverbeds. And you sort of swoop down and land in that Kavinga area and you go, well, this doesn't look like monopoles.
Yeah,
a lot of that's what we're trying to break you away from here, folks, is that monopoles is not just the floodplains and the four pools. It's this huge, huge area. And when we landed at Kavinga, I mean, straight off the cuff, we get into our safari vehicle, drive to camp, and I knew it was going to be a special area. Not only is Kavinga a really cool camp who knows exactly what you're there for, but they've got those hides. They've got two of them, which are incredible. We'll dig into those now. But that area with the huge baobabs and the big rocky cliff faces and the dry riverbeds and so forth is just amazing. And I know you haven't been there before. I hope you're jealous because you should be and you need to get there.
Yeah, so I haven't been to Kavinga itself. And so just for context, Kavinga actually sits on the Rikomichi River, which then if we go back to our page, if you go from the middle of that A4 page and you go up to the top left-hand corner, that river flows from the escarpment down in the south all the way through to Monoflood, to the Zambezi and the floodplain itself. But literally just where Kavinga is, there's another river that comes in there, and that's the Chitake. And the Chitake Spring is a little bit further to the east of Kavinga. And so I've been there several times. There is no lodge or camp out there. I mean, it's a natural spring. It spills out from the rock that sits beneath the Earth's surface and just creates this natural flow. Oh, man, it's a wild place. It is like when I've been there with the local guides, basically, you know, once that sun sets, you're either around the fire or you're in your tent because stuff moves around there.
It's
wild. Yeah. Johan's got stories of having morning coffee and having an impala come past first, then a wild dog, and then a lion. Like people are just, you know, morning traffic.
Yeah.
So it's wild, it's remote. And I think the big thing there, dry season, no water. And then, like you've said, either the Chitake Spring itself or that Kavinga, the pan and the hides that they've got up there with the water in front, animals are going to come because the river itself is a good 40 kilometers as the crow flies.
What do you mean to the Zambezi?
To the Zambezi, yeah. And so in the dry season, I mean, we used to see herds of buffalo come through there, elephants up and down the whole time. Yeah. And then big prides of lions that just congregate around these water sources. So I think what's happened over the years is that between that Chitake Spring and Kavinga's water, that these prides of lions, a bit like Wangi, they move between those areas. They'll spend a couple of days camped out around Kavinga, then the animals get a little bit nervous and they trail the buffalo a little bit and then they move around. And we're talking close distances here.
Yeah.
And then from what I've seen over the years, that waterhole at Kavinga is just, it gets more and more productive every year. There's a spot where a leopard comes in to drink.
It's like, well, there's the thing is, there's two, but it's like a flipping wildlife hand grenade goes off in that place every other day.
Yeah.
I've never been to Chitake Springs, even though we were at Kavinga. We had the option to take the drive down to Chitake Springs.
Yeah.
We decided, no, our waterhole that we have here is performing well enough, you know.
Yeah.
But I know Chitake Springs very popular with South African overlanders. I know it's very popular with Zimbabweans and you know, sort of more local people. It's maybe a little bit off the international circuit, if you know what I mean, just because there's no camps out there.
Yeah.
It is very remote and it is very, yeah,
it's
out there.
It's about 8Ks away, if that, from Kavinga itself.
That's right down the road.
And because there's no accommodation there, formal accommodation. You know, we're camping in.
Oh, there's campsites though, right?
There's sites, yes. So you've got these 3x3 meter dome tents, and like that's what we had, literally with a stretcher.
Yeah, no toilet blocks, ladies and gents.
No toilet blocks. No roads, and so you're walking.
Okay. Just find a spot, set up, and go for it.
Exactly, and then try and drop in. And I've had some incredible sightings there, but I think it, like you say, the point that we've included this into our itineraries and why it's so important is that it is monopoles. And it is quite unique, and it's a very different part of it. I think, you know, in the past, Kanga Camp, where natural pan that gets then pumped in the dry season, a lot closer to the river, provides a similar experience where there's, you know, water is the resource at this time of year. But I think Cavinga is just in a completely different habitat and part of the park, which is quite nice to experience. So, we've both had experiences in this part of the world. The photographic hide and that sort of stuff, that's, and the rooms, I think you're living in the lap of luxury compared to what we used to do.
Yeah,
so I would probably put the two as more experiential if you wanted to do Chitake Springs and have a wild, truly wild encounter. And I'm not too sure how many people still go out there. But then Cavinga is that more refined experience in that wilderness.
Look, it's certainly refined, but it's also a very humble.
Yeah,
you know,
nothing over the top.
Nothing over the top at all. With the rooms are standing there, all on stilts. They look out over this entire, what's the name of the river?
Rokomachi.
Thank you. And over the Pan and over the Rokomachi River, and it's a beautiful camp, but just really, really nice staff and great guiding. And what's most beneficial about that is it's a very exclusive area. There's no one else out there. I mean, they've got what, 6 or 7 or 8 rooms, if that. So they're really only sending out 2 or 3 vehicles a day, and that's it. But what really blew my mind is they have that lower photographic hide right on the actual Pan, and that's great. It pulls in herds of hundreds of buffalo at a time. I mean, there's probably over 300-400 elephants that frequent that waterhole every day. There's if you're a birder, there are flocks of guinea fowl like you've never seen before in the morning dust and the morning sunrise.
It's stunning. And then
when you decide to go out and drive or do a walk,
man. Well, you don't really. You kind of, it's interesting because, and that's just the bottom hide. Now they built another new one at the top. So the camp sort of sits on this crescent that looks out over the valley. And right at the top, they decided to build a little bird hide.
Yeah.
It's the size of the studio we're sitting in at the moment. Very similar to those hides you might get at Lentori or, in Goto House there in Kenya. Very small. And they really did have the intention of this thing pulling nice birds and you just being able to go sit there after lunch and, you know, have a beer and watch birds. This thing pulls lions and leopards every single night. It feels like you go in, it's got a long tunnel that you go down to get. It's very well put together, very quiet, very dark. You've got light switches that you can choose to put on and off. And when we first got there, I was like, bird hide, you know, great. But from often wildlife people that go on photographic safaris, birds are not the main thing, funny enough. Obviously, not everybody, of course, but they want teeth and claws and drama. So we're like, cool, nice hide, whatever. And then they sort of started telling us, but this thing's now, the lions are coming to drink here. The lions don't want to drink at the bottom because that water's dirty. They want to come right up here to the top where that water now pumps in. It's a little half a foot deep.
So what you're saying is you've got a predator waterhole and a prey
waterhole. And a prey waterhole. It's fantastic. And the bottom one turns into the situation where you've got like lions walking in between elephants' legs, and because everyone wants to come drink.
Yeah.
So in the early morning, you got these lions coming down to drink. Elephants also want to drink. Nobody pushes the elephants around, as we know. So I have the one vivid memory of a lioness just desperately wanting to drink. Her cubs were up the riverbed. We knew where they were. We didn't get a chance to see them, but we knew where they were. And she wanted to come drink, but there's like elephants everywhere. So we were getting these incredible shots of this lioness looking up at elephants through their legs. So it felt like they were, she was obviously at the side of them. Just these stunning slow motion videos of a lioness walking behind elephants, trying to get to the dam, getting chased away. So it's really cool. And you say like, what did you do? Just sit in the hide? And essentially you wake up in the morning, you listen. If you hear a lion roaring, you kind of know they're going to come drink. Lions need to drink just about every day, unless they're those crazy Namibian desert lions, but did you know well and truly, but we'll chat about that in another podcast. So you know things are going to come. It's just a matter of when. So what we would do typically when I was there is 4 mornings, we would drive out. Within about 10 minutes, you'd find a cat, a lioness wanting to come for a drink or other lions. And then just follow them, photograph them, enjoy them. As soon as you got to a point where it's like, okay, they're getting closer to the hide or the waterhole, zoom around up to the top of the lodge again, jump out, run down into the hide. It's quite near. And there she is coming in to drink. And you just get these stunning shots of her drinking or sunny moments, doesn't it? It had to be about the photograph. So it's special.
What you're saying is, I mean, that's why this is part of our itinerary. I mean, to go to Mana Pools and not have this, although we haven't even started to talk about the winter thorns and the light, that this is a photographer's dream. Low angles, water holes, animals coming there. Obviously, our safaris are timed to be in the dry season when water is a scarce resource. And a great way to be able to photograph and throughout the night as well, like, you know, evenings when things are coming down. And then you drive probably, what, a good it's about 40 kilometers, probably a good an hour and a half, and 2 hours.
2 hours.
2 hours.
3 hours, maybe, because you are stopping. I mean, what did we, you're going through the Mapani Forest, stopping for a little sneaky, wonderful chat here and there.
Cathedral Mapani as well.
Yeah, Cathedral Mapani, the big boys.
Yeah, those ancient Mapanis, you know, and some special birds popping out here and there.
And then you're into what Manipul's proper is. It's that floodplain. So now we've gone from the middle of the page to the top, where there's that broad margin.
And nothing can prepare you for that feeling of when you first look at that floodplain.
Yeah,
it's special.
But it is special. And because we're not just talking specifically about our trip there, what I have seen, just looking at a map now, between the floodplain and where Kavinga is, you know, in the past, we've just spoken about that Jess, the rest of that page being so empty and there's not much in there. Now there's camps. Again, Ingwepan was another place that we did a sleep out, a full moon sleep out during one of our adventure trails. There's now a camp there. Machaba have a camp at Ingwepan. So we're talking now pretty much halfway between the floodplain and Kavinga. There's a Malori Mashuma. So I'm just seeing there's quite a few camps that have popped up in this woodland area, probably taking their cue from the success of Kanga.
Yeah.
You know, where there's a pan in the middle of this thick bush, animals are going to be coming through there. Very wild, probably not as established and with animals as relaxed as either on the floodplain or back in Kavinga. But once we get to the floodplain, you kind of pull in and then you come out at the reserve quarters and you can either go to the east, to the right-hand side of the page, towards Nyamatusi.
Yeah.
You can go to the left, which is to the west, and then there's no shortage of options. And this is a national park as well. So there's campsites, there's self-drive people that are moving around, which is also something that not a lot of people maybe think about. I mean, when you get there, it doesn't detract from the experience.
It doesn't, it doesn't. It's not Kruger self-drive. It's not Posher self-drive, where it feels chaotic and
voluminous.
Voluminous. That's a good way to put it. Yeah. The Manipul's crowd, the people that go there to camp and to overland, are of a special breed, generally speaking, right? They usually are deep, deep nature lovers, not just people away for a weekend at Kruger.
Bush cats.
So these are bush cats, proper neckbeards from Southern Africa, you know the type. And my father-in-law is one of them. Shout out to my father-in-law. But anyway, when you're there, there's not hundreds of private vehicles. There's a few. And most of those people are
there as well.
It's a mission to get there. It's not like Zimbabwe has beautiful highways.
Yeah.
Well, anymore, really going all over the show. And my aunt actually did a drive from Johannesburg up to Manipul's recently. My family's from Zimbabwe. So they went back, like, let's go back to Manipul's, because their daughter came out from New Zealand, my cousin. And so they drove, and the roads are terrible, folks. So nobody's getting there unless you really want to get there. But it's interesting when you get to those floodplains. I don't know if you feel the same, but you sort of drive around in the vehicle and you just want to get on foot. You're kind of like, when can we stop this stupid vehicle and just start walking in a direction, any direction? It doesn't matter. Let's go touch the water. Let's go find an elephant to not get charged by. You know,
it's always funny, like, watching guests who go to Manipul's for the first time and maybe have been on safari in other places. So you drive in and then you see, you know, the general idea is that you scope through a stage to see which of the main stars and the characters of the floodplain are around. And so you could be looking through the forest and you see an elephant. Oh, cool. We pull the vehicle off and we stop and everyone starts getting off. And, you know, the first time that you do that, all of the guests are like, can we leave stuff here? Are we walking there? How long will we be? How long will we walk? Yeah. And for those of you who don't know, Manipul's is one of the few places where you can be out on foot, and even as a self-drive. And I know there's some regulations that might be creeping in. You have to have
a
ranger with you, and absolutely. Yeah. And so that's where, you know, where we choose to stay, highly qualified, walking, certified local guides.
Who are armed.
Absolutely. And then we approach the animal. Now, being on foot from a photography perspective, experience we'll come to, but photography wise, low angles, you know, half a meter this way, half a meter that way, dropping down.
Light on your tummy.
Those things, it opens up a whole new creative perspective. Never mind the experiential side of sitting. And you do get this because once you've walked out, I don't know, we do it the same because we were together in one of the sightings, but find the guy that you want to photograph with a nice big bull. Maybe it is Boswell, who's one of the well-known tuskers.
Yeah.
I know you struggled to find him, Luke.
Well, we got him. He's been my friend most of the time.
But, you know, you walk up and you'd approach, and then your morning just takes on the pace of the subject.
Yeah.
And if he's busy feeding and he pulls down a big branch and he's going to be there for the next 10 minutes, you sit and you can be 15, 20 meters away from him and just observe. You hear every sound, every crack of the branch. You see him like the dexterity that he uses with his trunk to get the little pieces that he wants.
So it's brought to mind now, you know, when you're on a vehicle-based safari, which are great, you know, Zimbabwe, Botswana, Kenya, Tanzania, Sabi Sands, wherever you're going, when it's vehicle-based, you kind of have this, as a photographic person, even sometimes as not a photographic person, but you kind of, you'll pull into a cat sighting, whatever, and then eventually kind of like, okay, where's the next thing? But when you're on like a walking-based safari, you're never worried about hustling to get to the next sighting. You're never worried about, I wonder what the lions are doing. Let's go see. You know, you often will find that you finish with a lion sighting on the normal safari. People are like, okay, where's the leopard? And you're like, oh, calm down, guys. Can we not just appreciate the lion?
Yeah.
But when you're on a walking safari and Mana Pools forces this more so than anything, your presence in that situation, you're not even thinking about what else you could be seeing right now. This elephant pulling down a tree in front of you, or the wild dogs playing while you sit on your bum just watching this view with the Zambezi River in the distance.
Yeah.
Nothing else matters. On a vehicle, it can sometimes creep in that other things do matter. But when you're on foot, nothing else matters. So just made me think about that. You know, you don't consider anything when you're on foot except the thing.
And from a guiding perspective, how do you like to map out your stay and plan there? Like, what is your brief to the guests to say, right, guys, we're here for 4 nights. I know on our safari, we're there for a total of 5 nights on the floodplain itself.
Yeah. About 3 nights Kavinga, 5 nights.
Yeah. How do you map it out? What is your kind of brief to them?
I work very much with the local guides. You know, you have to. I don't think you can, you know, you just have to see how things go. But having stayed at Namatusi more so than anywhere else, now Namatusi is quite far to the east.
And it's one of the most luxurious options. It is the most luxurious option.
Probably. I mean, there's a Great Plains camp further out from them, which is probably a little bit, you know, there's also a wilderness camp. Which might be a bit more luxurious. Namatusi is not overly luxurious. It is very nice, but it fits a pretty decent price point to be fair for what you're getting. But it is exclusive and cool, and you know, it's wonderful. And what's nice about Namatusi is the rooms are like 200 meters apart, sometimes 100 meters apart. It's just very spread out. So it's this very exclusive, private feeling experience that you get there. And even the guide rooms, amazing.
Yeah.
It's really nice.
So you'll lay the land and plan for this.
Yeah. So generally speaking, if I'm at Namatusi or in that eastern sector, then I'll definitely try and work that sector to begin with. Because you never know, Freddy's out that side. Freddy's another elephant that likes to stand and he likes frequenting that side. So you can often find yourself just with Freddy and no one else around you. No one's worried about Boswell. You know, Boswell can get a bit, you know, people want to find him quite often. But and then there's also the Namatusi Pride, which you might find out there. And they're roaring all around camp. So always try and work that area. But eventually, once you've worked that sort of area for maybe 1, 2, maybe even up to 3 game drives, then it's time to start like working that main Mana Pools floodplain and taking the drive down there. It takes about 25 minutes to get there from Namatusi. It's a beautiful drive. You're driving basically through floodplains nonetheless and seeing incredible things. And then working that floodplain just basically day after day. And what I love to do is sort of start on that eastern side of the floodplain, one of the main floodplains, and just walk all the way across. You're not really walking at a particular subject. I mean, it's always good to go and try find Boswell or Boneg, or I don't know what all these elephants with their names and whatever it might be.
And a real one.
Brookie Boy and Boneg, Fred,
or
Boris, or
Freddy.
And just walk that plane. I mean, Eland, Impala, Waterbuck, you will never take better photographs of those sort of species, baboons, things like that, than you will at
lots of interactions.
It's stunning.
Yeah, so I do the similar sort of thing at my general brief is, listen, if we see dogs, so we pick up fresh signs for dogs,
you go
for then we'll work it. But we're not going to go out to try and find dogs. Yeah.
Those dogs with my camera, Biz's camera. I was trying to keep visual on them as they're running. Biz was back with our guide and I'm just running across there. Never out in the bush, they say. I was like, no, these dogs are not getting away from me.
But it is, it's a thing, like you can spend time chasing tail literally to try and find those things. So that's my first point. Invariably over a 5-night stay, you pick up fresh tracks or they're found somewhere and you get to work them. But otherwise it's about, you know, there's a couple of scenes rather than specific things. You know, when you go out on a game drive, it's like, well, we'll go this way and see what we find, or this was there.
Yeah.
In Mana Pools, you know the light at this time of day in this patch of forest is going to be good.
Yeah.
So we can go there, and then we hope that one of the main characters of the stage is there. There's always elephants around. There's always baboons, backlighting, rim lighting, warm light.
Yeah.
So, you kind of have these little hotspots. And so it's not a case of, like you said, with finding a subject and then saying, right, what's next? It's like, this is our mission for this afternoon.
Yeah, this is it.
And
this elephant is our afternoon.
And I know that there's some guests who've traveled with me now listening, thinking, oh yeah, we go with a mission. And then, you know, my age old thing is,
yeah.
The good thing about having a plan is that you can change it at any time.
Yeah.
Because invariably something else pops out. Mm-hmm. You know, lions, if we get fresh tracks in the morning and we're the first people out, we'll go and walk them.
Mm.
And that's another thing. It's like, well, hang on, we're walking lions. Yeah.
Yeah. That's what I love about that number two area is that if the lion's calling out there, it takes a tremendously long time for anyone else to get to that area.
Yeah.
So you can go and hit those lions fairly early on if you like
to
get them.
But anyway. And then further out to the west as well. So, you know, we're using Vundu Camp now for our scheduled departure. And they have quite a unique offering again that they've got this exclusive concession.
Yeah.
And so no one else drives into that space. It's, you know, got controlled access pretty much because it's off the beaten track. And I've been there twice and we've had such great encounters there. And I think we got very lucky with dogs very close by, not necessarily in their concession, but very close by. And then we had Boswell in that space. And so for those of you who don't know, Boswell is one of the main yellies that people come to and see there. He walks up and down the floodplain depending on his mood, what the ladies are doing and where the food is and how much he's been harassed. But to spend time with him in that space was really a privilege. We were the only guests there. We had coffee with him and we literally just spent the morning with him seeing
us walk along. Coffee with an elephant, you know? One of Africa's most famous.
Yeah. And one of the other really cool things that I enjoyed about Kavinga is that, Vundu, the sunset boat cruise, which I haven't been able to do at any of the other camps along the river that I've stayed at in the past, whether it's Zambezi Expeditions, Nyamatusi, and to be able to go out on the river, because obviously during the day, elephants are coming down to drink. They go onto the islands in the middle of the day. Personally, I find it a little bit more comfortable in a canoe. And there's something about, it's quite special about downing a Zambezi on the Zambezi. Zambezi is the local beer, but also the river. So, you know, the sunsets in that part of the world are just insane.
Yeah.
Hi there. I'm just popping in quickly again to ask, are you dreaming of Mana Pools yet? If so, join Wild on an unforgettable photographic safari to Mana Pools, one of Africa's most iconic wilderness areas. Photograph elephants on foot, wild dogs, and incredible wildlife moments alongside one of our expert Wild Eye photographic guides. Visit wildeye.com to learn more. But for now, though, back to Andrew and Luke.
Especially from the Zim side, looking over across to Zambia, right? Because of the sunset behind the escarpment. And I've looked at your photographs many times in your videos of elephants in silhouette crossing or in the middle of that water and the sun going down behind them. And it's just, I'm butchering the explanation of these shots, but they were stunning, you know, and just magical moments.
Yeah. And this is again, the thing is like, there's another tick box for me is somewhere along the line. You have to break away from chasing and going on wildlife, get to the edge of the river to watch a sunset, you know, with Acacia Point in the foreground and you're looking across and there's Zambian escarpment in the background and the sun going down. Little things, even being creative, you know, when that orange red light is reflecting off the river, slow shutter speeds panning across and getting these abstract, there's some very, very cool opportunities to be had. And so I think, you know, there's no shortage of options of accommodation on the floodplain. We've used Zambezi Expeditions for a number of years. There's some changes going on with African bush camps in that camp, and I think it's now back into play for 27. But the move to Vundu for me unlocks the private concession and the opportunity to get out in that boat in the afternoon.
Yeah.
And yes, it's a little bit further west, but the exclusivity that we get from there, and you know, we know where we need to be in terms of that forest area, and you can still get there and make the most of those opportunities.
Yeah.
The dogs aren't often out in that part of the world as well.
Yeah. Look, I've never been to Vundu, so the idea of a private concession, as big as it might be or as small as it might be, within Mana Pools does sound really cool, because if Boswell is out there, like I know that one year when I was there, I was searching for Boswell heavily.
Yeah.
Every day. And then I chat to Mike Laubscher, who's at Vundu, and he's chilling with Boswell there on the private concession, you know. He's or something like that, or the dogs are out there or whatever it might be. I'm excited to one day experience Vundu.
It's great.
It's really cool. I'm quite jealous that I haven't been there yet.
No, it's a great camp. And obviously Nick Dyer and the guys, they're very involved with the filming of Dynasties and with wild dog conservation in general.
Yeah.
So very knowledgeable crew. And just on the dogs, I think, you know, it is important to note that the dogs being an endangered species and moving across there and just being such a desirable thing, and especially after dynasties which you know, outlined the pack dynamics and gave character to the individuals, they're highly sought after.
Yeah.
And so typically, you know, if you get wind that the dogs have been found, especially if they've been found in the morning and that's your plan for the afternoon, you can arrive there and there can be quite a few people around.
There can be, yeah.
And I think it's important to note, like, we're not trying to hide anything here, but, you know, a lot of people will go and sit there because one of the things that we all want to see with the dogs is that initial greeting ceremony and the wake up and the stretch. So everyone gets there early, sits and waits. I've seen a couple of times now where these dogs are actually very quiet. They don't even greet. They just get up and they start mouthing and off they go.
Yeah.
And it's often because there's hyenas that are trailing them. Yeah. Between the small hooded vulture that's always around and these hyenas. But someone was actually saying that they believe that they're starting to not greet and create the chaos that they normally do with all the vocalization to give the hyenas a slip. And, you know, so half an hour later, the hyenas poke their heads up and, oh, hang on, the dogs are gone. Now they've got to go and...
Yeah.
And I mean, if we can smell a wild dog, you can imagine for a hyena, they know exactly where they've gone. So they catch up quite quickly. So it can get busy, but generally, you know, your self-drives they're not as brave going out on foot as when you are with guides. There's a lot of locals that are very comfortable doing it out there.
I mean, you do sometimes end up with a situation, quite often actually, where the dogs sleep quite close to a road.
Yes.
As dogs do, it's as predators do in general. And there in those situations, you can have quite a few people that rock up on the road and then just sit and wait. But people behave. It's not like you're dealing with idiots. And
no, this isn't like Serengeti and Dutu.
Yeah, it's like chaos. And
which is funny because in these other places where we do experience this, you've got guides that are in control. Here we're talking where a lot of the volume can potentially come from self-drives. And I think that speaks to what you were saying. The people that go to mana pools are generally people who really and truly appreciate wildlife.
Yeah. Yeah. And as you know, I don't know if you've ever stopped with day visitors or overlanders, people that are at mana public camping, and you chat with these people, they usually know about the wild dogs just as much as your guide knows about the wild dogs. And this is the eighth time they've been to mana pools this year. And they're like, it's a particular breed of human being that goes to this place.
And they're generally a good kind.
They're a good kind. Yeah. Even if their shirt is off at 7 o'clock in the morning and you're there.
Don't judge me.
No, it's good though. They're bush cats. And that's what's great. You know, it's sort of the camaraderie that you get across the entire national park, which is all across that entire floodplain, which is really quite cool.
Yeah.
But I've never really found mana pools to be overly busy or frustrating or anything like that, you know. So it's,
I think that's the beauty of being able to walk, is that at any stage you can park a vehicle and go off, and you can literally be the only people out there for the afternoon.
Yeah, not ever when you are looking for Boswell, right, and or the dogs or whatever, and you're driving with your guide and your guide sees a vehicle parked.
Yeah.
Now you got to scrutinize this vehicle. There's no people on the vehicle. Which way did they go? Where did they, you know, trying to find where they're walking? Because maybe they can see Boswell and we can't. Okay, try and track their footprint. You know, it's quite fun. You saw a lone vehicle parked out somewhere, and what did they do? So yeah, they must have.
Yeah. Just maybe to as we land this, is the walking side of things for anyone considering joining one of our scheduled groups, and you know,
or even if you're wanting to do a little
But the walking, a lot of people get concerned about it. It's not a route march, and it's walking with purpose. It's not like, oh, we're just going to walk and see what we can find. You've already glassed those forests and said, wait, we're going to walk towards there because that elephant bull is you know, exhibiting some stretching behavior. That's what we want to see, is them reaching out onto these winterthorn canopies to pull down branches and pods.
Yeah.
And so it's a slow walk out there. I mean,
your worst, you have to hustle.
Yes. But, okay. So from a photographic perspective, it's like, oh, quickly get down to there to get this next angle. But you're not, it's not like a 10K route march. You're walking relatively short distances, and you'll walk out, jut in to get there. And once you've got what you've had and you've had some time, then you walk back to the vehicle, you drive, you see the next thing, you get out and you walk. And again, it's about being in certain areas at times that are fairly close to the road, not massive distances in.
Yeah.
And on the flip side, if you're not there for photography, you just want to walk and explore. This place is
it'll blow your mind. It is the best walking destination.
And the long pool at the back end there, you walk in from Seco,
and you can go down to that cool little viewpoint where you just sit on the hippos all around, and it's the best.
It is a very, very unique destination. And I think for people that have, you know, they've ticked off all the other safari places, if you haven't yet done this. What would you...
No, monopole should go to the top of your list, in my opinion.
Yeah. And how would you combine it in with Zim or...
Vic Falls for sure.
Yeah.
Because you can't go to that part of the world and not go to Vic Falls. It's like how could you, you know, let that down? But Vic Falls is an easy shoe. And I mean, you can fly from South Africa to Vic Falls very easily. And then from Vic Falls to Manor Pools very easily.
Yeah.
Harare to, you know, however you want to do it. Another good combination, always Lower Zambezi. It's a little bit of a schlep, although now they have, as Lower Zambezi focuses on the Zambian side.
Mm.
So the Zambezi River, just for people that are listening, splits Zimbabwe and Zambia from each other. Obviously two completely different countries that have two completely different passport controls and entrance requirements and so forth, even though there is a common visa you can get for the two. But typically, yeah, that combines very well. So the way that I did it last time is go to Lower Zam first. Lower Zambezi National Park in Zambia is full of fireworks. There's predators everywhere. It's a much denser winter thorn forest. It's full of drama. It's vehicle-based. You do very little walking at all. And so it's very fast-paced. And then end up in Manor Pools. Do it that way around, I think. Because Manor Pools, you then get to have this nice sort of really experiential end to your safari if you want to do it that way. So that'll combine nicely. Or just South Africa, Manor Pool, Achmalamala, Sabi Sand Safari along with Manor Pools. It's very easy to do that logistically.
Logistically, there's quite a cool travel day to combine the Lower Zambezi and Manor Pools.
Yeah.
Boat all the way down. It's probably a good 80 Ks by boat to Chirundu, where you get out. If you're on the Zimbabwean side, you would get out, cross the bridge, into Zambia, drop down back onto the river, get back on the boat, go all the way back the way that you've come, and then you're on Zambia. I think another little option is Lake Kariba. African Parks have taken over Matusadana National Park, so that's quite an up and coming space. Very chill, laid back, different way to do it, especially good for honeymooners, maybe doing some activities but then having a break in between. And then from there, you can connect into Wangi or, like you say, straight into Vic Falls. And Vic Falls is a stone's throw away from Kasani, which then opens up Botswana, Livingstone into the rest of Zambia, Kafue. Yeah. So it's very easy to combine these places with
the... It's easy to get to Livingstone to South Luangwa, Livingstone to Lower Zambezi, or across to Botswana. And the Chobe and the Delta are not far hard to access from those sort of, you know, it's Southern Africa is wonderful. It's got a lot going on, and you can sort of between Botswana, Zambia, Zimbabwe, and South Africa, and even Namibia, you can throw that in there. It's a fairly easy logistical thing for you to put together a lovely 3-4 week epic journey through Southern Africa.
Excellent. Well, when is our next Manor Pools trip? It is
August next year, I think.
August next year.
Yeah.
It's going to be a goodie. That part of the world is just magic. 3 to 11 August with Don.
Yeah.
It's a very, very special spot. The combination of Kavinga with those hides and that dry area down the south with Vundu and the floodplain and that private concert.
Proper armchair sort of safari along with a really experiential, adventurous part of the safari. It's really cool.
Excellent.
And I think, folks, if you're photographers, you will love it. You will fill up your portfolio in ways you never thought possible on everything from baboons to insects to the biggest elephant you've ever seen. And if you're not a photographer, you'll have one of the most spiritual safari experiences that you can possibly have in Manor Pools. You know, it's impressive. Can't say it enough.
I agree fully.
Cool. All right, folks. Well, thank you very much for joining us. Thanks, Andrew. And we'll catch you all in the next one. If you want to go to Manor Pools, please feel free to reach out to us. We will get you there safely, soundly, and you'll have an epic trip. See you in the bush, folks. Cheers.
Ciao.